Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
I'm Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic here at WGNplus.com, the podcast that you should be listening to every Monday as it's posted on WGNplus.com. I'm Elton Jim Toronto, and today is a special edition of Captain Podtastic because not only is it episode 10, and they said we'd never even do 8, and here we are at 10. But 10 is always, not only is it a nice round number, but it's always a very special number to me. 10 was always my number in most of the sports that I played. When I was in grammar school, I was on the basketball team, I was number 10. When I was in high school and I played high school basketball, I was number 10. And so I've always had a nice connection to number 10. And of course, if you're a Cub fan, you know that number 10 was number of Cubs Hall of Fame third baseman Ron Santo. And so he was number 10, too. And that was, I loved Ron Santo. I started playing third base, and then I wound up being a catcher. But I started at third base because Ron Santo was my favorite baseball player. And so that's why I think I always picked number 10. But anyway, so here on our special number 10 episode of Captain Podtastic, as luck would have it, and maybe the podcast gods are shining down, I was thinking about what to do for today's show, and I'm looking at the calendar, and this show is posted on Monday, July 25th, and I'm looking at my calendar, and I notice that July 27th is Wednesday. And then I certainly recalled, because it is one of those special days in my life, July 27th, 1976, it was a Tuesday. I've done some research. I didn't remember that. But on July 27th, 1976, in the city of Chicago, a young Elton John fan named Jim Toronto, who lived in the northwest side of Chicago, him and his mom went down to Madison Street, the old madhouse on Madison, called the Chicago Stadium, to see Elton John. And that was my first Elton John concert, July 27th, 1976. And I still have the ticket stub, which is laminated, so it looks just like it did back then. And I still have all the cool merch, if you will, that I bought that day. The program, the T-shirt, the poster, and I've even gotten some new merch as the years have gone by, thanks to good old eBay, some backstage passes from that concert and some pins and buttons and things like that. There wasn't as extensive. Back in the 70s, they were just learning that not only would people buy concert tickets, but they would buy keepsakes from the concert. So the whole idea of a concert T-shirt, nowadays, everybody thinks, well, that's part and parcel. You go to the concert and they've got the merch table. That was not par for the course in the mid-70s. This was the beginning of the real merchandising and the monetizing of rock and roll. And so the concerts, it was only in the mid-70s when they started to realize, wait a minute, this concert happens and then it's done and people want a keepsake. And so that's where the whole concert T-shirt thing really started, was in the early 70s. But not everyone did that because that was an expense. There was no guarantees that every band would sell a lot of T-shirts. So mainly, initially, it was only the real big, very popular bands like an Elton John and The Who and The Stones and stuff like that who first had those merchandise stands and tables because they knew that those fans would buy things. And I still have most of my original stuff. So I thought it'd be fun today to talk about my 40th anniversary and what it was like to be a 12-year-old kid and seeing your idol for the first time. And then, as we usually do, we have a pop culture club here with Mick Kaler. And as luck would have it, there's one reason why Mick and I have been friends for more than 30 years. And I always joke that we are twin sons of different mothers. And part of that reason is because we do share a lot of things in common. And one of the things that we bonded on early in our friendship 30 years ago when we first met each other doing radio in college, at Elmhurst College here locally in the Chicago area, was Elton John. We bonded on two major things. We bonded on major fans of the Honeymooners TV show with Jackie Gleason, and we bonded on Elton John. And we were more than just casual fans. And as not surprisingly, Mick's a few years older than me, a couple years older. And so Elton did a 4-night stand at the Chicago Stadium. That's 20,000 people each night, did 4 sold-out shows. That's 80,000 people. And apparently, the Wirtz family, Arthur Wirtz, Rocky's grandfather, who now owns the Blackhawks, he wanted Elton to do a 5th show. And they were thinking about it, but they needed a break because they had just done 4 in a row. And I believe they were going to Minnesota after. And so they needed a couple of days off because they had just done 4 shows in a row, but they actually wanted to do a 5th show, which would have been 100,000 people he would have played to here in Chicago. He was that popular. He was that big. And nowadays, younger people hear of Elton John and they think of him as an older artist and this legendary thing. But you have to understand the popularity of Elton. Why would it, a lot of people ask me, why Elton, Jim? Why do you like Elton so much? And you have to understand that from 1970 through 76, but especially 73 through 76, those 3 years, and if you really want to pinpoint it, from 75 to 76, Elton John was as big a star in not just music, but in entertainment as there has ever been. And, I mean, we're rivaling, and maybe even because of the lack of outlets. Like, you know, don't forget, Michael Jackson was huge with Thriller in the early 80s, but he also had MTV to help push that along. In the 70s, there was no cable television. There was no Spotify. There was no YouTube. You had radio, pretty much, and magazines. And maybe a little television. And even then, rock stars were not on television all that much. And if they were, they weren't the more outlandish ones. They were more of a mainstream one. And Elton really didn't get on television very much here in the United States until about 1975, when he became sort of such a big star that finally the American networks said, well, we have to have this guy on, because he was still viewed as kind of, one of those crazy rock stars. And he wore the glasses and all the crazy outfits. And he was deemed kind of a part of the counterculture. But he got so big and so popular between 1975 and 1976 that even the network television shows and networks here in the United States finally started to put him on. In fact, one of the best appearances he ever did, and you can go on YouTube and find it. Cher broke up with Sonny, and she was going to start to have her own show. And she first had a special to sort of test it out to see if Cher could carry a show on her own, because she had been so identified with Sonny for so many years. And so it was the Cher special from 1975, and you go on YouTube and it's there. And Elton and Cher were very good friends. And Elton appeared on her special. And that was one of the first times he was on American television for an extended period of time like that. And it was great. He sang Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, which at that time was a number one song. And he wore this great outfit that, had this big giant wizard hat and this poofy jacket, this kind of metallic kind of space age look. It was classic Elton. And then a very cool segment of Cher and Elton just together, Elton with the piano and Cher, and they were singing songs together. Very cool from a musical standpoint. And then a real funny skit with Bette Midler and Flip Wilson were also guests on this show. And this was pure 70s, folks. And they did a funny skit of what would it like to be if if they of all four of them were in the old people's home. And so they were all dressed up in old people's makeup, and Elton came flying in, and he had a bald head and a big mustache, and he was kind of a little on the crazy side, and he came in his wheelchair, and it was all motorized, and it was all crazily flamboyantly decorated, and it's really a funny skit. Go on YouTube and check that out. But as I said, Elton John was so huge during the 70s, that there's actually a statistic that said that at one point, his record sales were responsible for 2% of all the records sold in the world. Now, 2% might not sound like a lot, but when you consider 2% of every record sold in the world, that is unbelievable. And when his popularity began, he was breaking all kinds of attendance records at for concerts and selling out two or three different, two or three nights. In fact, on this tour that I went to see my first time in 1976, the tour was actually called Louder Than Concord, Louder Than a Concord, but Not Quite as Pretty. And it was a loud concert, and I'll talk about that. But the tour ended in New York with 17. Or was it seven? Was it seven? Yeah, seven, I think. Not 17. That's crazy. Or was it? I have to look this up now. I think it was seven. Seven sold-out shows at Madison Square Garden, which is huge. Like I said, he was going to do five here. He did seven there a week. And that was unheard of at the time. Still is, kind of. So his popularity was amazing. So people say to me, well, why Elton? And you have to understand, I'm a little kid, and I'm listening to the radio, and I'm an only child, so music and television were kind of my siblings, and that's where I went to occupy myself, as I said many times. I'd play with my friends during the day, we'd go out and do things, but then, we'd go home, and everybody went home to their homes, and they all had brothers and sisters, but I didn't. So I was kind of by myself, and so I was in my room, and I found music at a very young age, younger than most of my friends, as well as television. And I still count the day that I started becoming an Elton John fan. I would say 1973, because that was the time that I bought my first Elton John record. And it wasn't an album, in fact. It was a 45, and I still have the original one that I bought, and it was Crocodile Rock from 1973. So that's when I say I became an Elton John fan, because I made the next leap. I wasn't just listening to the record, his stuff on the radio, which I was. I actually went out and spent, 67 cents and bought the vinyl 45 of Crocodile Rock. So I must have been a fan to go out and spend 67 cents at Goldblatt's for that single. So that's when I considered I think my first album, though, was Goodbye Yellow Brick Road, which also came out in 1973. So I always count 1973 as when I became a fan. So you have to think, I was 9 years old. So by the time 1976 comes, I can remember by that time, and if you know me at all, if you listen to me on the radio and you understand, you even get a little trickle of what my personality is like, when I do something, I usually go all in. And so, of course, when I liked Elton John, I wasn't going to keep it quiet. In fact, here we are today, and my nickname is Elton Jim, okay? So this has been almost a lifetime kind of preoccupation. Some say an obsession, I say a preoccupation. Anyway, so, of course, if I'm becoming an Elton John fan, you're going to know about it, even when I'm 9 years old. And so right away, I immersed myself in all things Elton. And it was interesting from a personal standpoint, in that when I was a little kid, I, like most at that time, I was into sports. And I remember my dad bought me three posters for my bedroom. And one was Dick Butkus, the middle linebacker for the Bears. Another was Bobby Hull, who was the best Blackhawk at the time. And the other was Ron Santo. Once again, as I said, good old Ronnie. Oh, number 10. Good old Ron. And one of the best Cubs at the time and one of my favorite players. And so those posters were up in my bedroom as well as other things. So all of a sudden, I get into Elton John. And there wasn't a lot of, once again, rock and roll was just beginning to monetize. They were just figuring out that, hey, we could make some money on this. So there were some posters available in the early 70s. And there were some merchandise, and they used to have these iron-on T-shirts where you would actually go to a store, and they would have the, and they still have them now, not as much though. And you would buy the iron-on, and it was a, and they had these this big kind of this heater, this iron, and you'd buy the T-shirt and you'd buy the transfer, and then they put it on a T-shirt and and that's the way they made a T-shirt for you. So I had in my Elton John time, I had over 100 Elton John T-shirts. So once again, I never do anything. I'm either all or nothing. So I had, you name it. You know, I would wear these Elton John T-shirts everywhere. Now, I went to a Catholic grammar school, so I couldn't wear them to school every day. But outside of school and any kind of school functions on our own where we could dress up, I always had an Elton John T-shirt. In 1975, Elton John was in the movie The Tommy. He played the pinball wizard. So guess what I was for Halloween in 1975? Of course, I was the pinball wizard. How did I do that? My mom had a big pair of round sunglasses. So I got some silver glitter and some Elmer's glue, and I put all the silver glitter on her round glasses to make them look like the glasses that Elton wore as a pinball wizard. If you remember the outfit, the big thing was he had these giant Doc Marten boots. And they were ridiculously, they were 5 or 6 feet tall. But the look was he had this little kind of stocking cap with a pinball on the top of it, like a winter cap with one of those balls, but this was a pinball on top of it. He had these big, giant, diamond-studded glasses and these boots. Well, I found one of my winter caps, and there used to be some deodorant. I can't remember what it was in the 70s, but some deodorant, the top of the deodorant, had a silver ball. So I took the silver ball off whatever the deodorant was, and then I glued it on to the top of my cap, of my winter cap, and I cut off the little ball that was on there, that little crocheted ball they used to have on there. And all of a sudden, I had my pinball wizard cap, and I had my pinball wizard glasses with the glitter on it. And I wore, you know, some pants and a shirt, and I was a pinball wizard. So anyway, as I said, I was way into this stuff. So you have to understand, now for the first time, because, you know, going to a concert in 1976 for a young kid, that was not the norm. Now you see, you know, parents, baby boomers bringing their kids with them, or even younger parents bringing their kids, and rock concerts have become now, you know, just the place to go. And so parents, to see a 10-year-old kid or even a 5-year-old kid or something like that at a concert, depending who it is not all that odd. But back in the 70s, you got to remember, this is at the really the height not only of when rock is really taking hold as a major entity, but it's also the big days of pot smoking and drug taking. So 12-year-old kids were not the norm, and certainly they weren't the norm when their mom took them. I can only imagine. So don't forget, this is 1976 in Chicago. So most of the people attending this are all stoners, pretty much. You know, they've got the long hair, the Jesus hair, the beards, the T-shirts, the scruffy jeans. And, you know, I remember when that concert started in 1976, I knew what marijuana was just because you heard about it, but I never knew what the heck was going on. And all of a sudden, I remember this woof of smell once the lights went out. And I didn't know what the heck that was. And I probably got a contact high when I was 12 years old. Who knew? But I remember going to, I think I even said to my mom, is something burning? And I think she's just like, yeah, don't worry about it. But I can only imagine what I must have looked like to these stoners. Because here I am, 12 years old. Luckily, I always looked older than my age. So I probably looked like, you know, their age, only I could have grown a beard probably by the age of 12. My hormones were moving really quick. But I can only imagine what it must look like, me and my mom walking around the Chicago Stadium. Meanwhile, all these stoners are walking around. But so it was such a huge deal for me personally, because here's this guy who I have been listening to his music now for 3 or 4 years. And I've only seen him on television or in a movie or in a magazine or on an album cover. And suddenly, I'm going to have the opportunity to see him in person. And this was crazy. Once again, you know, no one saw celebrities, you know, especially, you know, in, you know, the northwest side of Chicago. You didn't see celebrities every day. And so the idea of me actually being in the same room with this guy after 3 years, and of course my bedroom, thankfully my mom had a good line on me. She knew what I was up to. I had my room literally ceiling, walls, you know, doors of the closets, the curtains, everywhere. I had pictures of Elton. And my point was, I had those three posters before. So suddenly I'm starting to like Elton John. So suddenly I have one little poster, and then I put up a little picture here, and I put a little picture there. And my dad is kind of noticing this, and he's not saying anything, because my dad's kind of an old school guy. And suddenly I make the big move. I replace the sports figures with Elton posters. Ooh. Suddenly my dad was like, okay, wait a minute. Now what's going on? Now let's not forget too. You know, I'm 11, I'm 10, 11, 12 years old, 10, 11, 12, whatever. And, you know, so like good, like every good little boy at that time, I've got my sports heroes up on the wall. Well, suddenly up on the wall, I've got posters of this guy at the time. He had not come out as being gay, but certainly with the flamboyant feather outfits and the glasses and the piano and the whole thing. You know, my dad's looking at Elton John like, what the heck is this guy about? And what the heck is my son doing with his picture, removing Dick Butkus, the great linebacker, and Bobby Hull and Ron Santo, and putting up pictures of Elton John? Uh-oh, should I be worried about my son? We never had that conversation, but I have to believe that there was a point there where he was like, okay, what the hell is going on? I even made, and thankfully my mom said, you got to take a picture of this room because you're going to want to remember this. And people won't even believe what you did. And thankfully, even back then, when people didn't carry around cameras all the time, I just had this bad little Kodak brownie camera. But thank God she made me do that, because I still have these pictures of my room, and it is hilarious. Pictures, like I said, posters, pictures from magazines, cut out on the ceilings, on mirrors, on every wall, on the like I said, on the curtains, on every possible place, on, you know, on the little spots of my the drawers on my furniture, you name it. There was everything, anywhere I could put a picture of Elton, I put a picture. And thankfully I took a picture of that room. And I still have it. And I even took and made this giant collage of all these pictures of Elton. Thank God I took a picture of that. I don't know what ever happened to that collage. I can't believe I wouldn't have thrown it out. I bet you my dad threw it out, to be honest with you. But but at least I have a picture of it. So I was a huge, huge, huge. I was Elton Jim before I was Elton Jim. Okay. So you have to understand. The chance to see this concert was a huge, huge deal for me. And I'll never forget, I woke up in the morning one day, I think it was like April of 1976, and on the top of the newspaper, this is how big this was, folks. Like I said, this was not just, oh, by the way, there's a concert. Elton John was the biggest star in the world. He was not just a rock star. He was the star. And on the top of the newspaper, above the headline, in the left-hand corner, I wake up in the morning, and I always used to read the paper as a young kid, and there's a picture of Elton, and it says, Elton John to play, you know, Elton John concerts coming, you know, in summer. Well, I mean, forget about it. I'm out of my mind. Now I'm 12 years old. I don't even know what that means. I don't know where I get a ticket. I don't know anything about this. All I know is, I've got to go and see this. I mean, I am out of my mind. And I'll never forget. So I go to my mom, I got to go. So there was four shows. And that's, as I said, that was a huge amount for anybody at that time to sell out four shows at the Chicago Stadium at 20,000 a clip. So the tickets go on sale. Now, the tickets went on sale like during the day. I'm in school. And who, there was no internet, folks. You, when you bought tickets to a concert, you had to go in line either at the venue, and at that time there was a new thing called Ticketron, which became Ticketmaster. But there's a thing called Ticketron, and the reason why it was called Tron was because it used a computer. In 1976, nobody even knew what a computer was. But the Tron word made it sound high-tech. And there was a movie called Tron, but, you know, Ticketron. And they were computerized tickets. Because usually, the only way you got tickets to an event is you went to the venue's box office. And you got these printed. They're actually pretty cool. I've got a few of these. They were printed up tickets by the venue. And then suddenly there were these outlets where you can go and get tickets. Ticketron. So I'll never forget. I was with my mom, and I'm like, I have to get tickets to this concert. Now there's four shows, so the chance of getting a ticket was still pretty good, but certainly I'm not going to get a front row seat. But so I go there. I didn't even go on the first day, maybe the second day, or maybe that later that day when I came home from school. Can't remember what day we went to buy the tickets, but I go there, and obviously the first day the tickets were selling like hotcakes. So we go to Ticketron, and it was they were in department stores. That's where these outlets were. And they were always in Sears. That's when Sears actually was actually a popular store. Nowadays, no one even knows what Sears is. But there was a time when Sears was a pretty popular store. So there was a Ticketron's on the Six Corners. I lived on the northwest side of Chicago, and there's an area called Six Corners where Cicero and Milwaukee and Irving meet, and there are Six Corners, and that's what it's and still known. There's a few Six Corners areas now in the city, I understand that. But this was the original Six Corners, and it was on the northwest side by Cicero, Milwaukee, and Irving. And that Sears is still there. And that was sort of a benchmark of that neighborhood. So we go to the Sears because there's a Ticketron there. And it was at one of the top levels. It was a multi-level store. And it was at one of the top levels. And in the far back corner was the Ticketron. And so I remember we went there. And the first show was sold out. And the second, and they said, well, there's not, And I said, well, where are the seats? And she said, and the woman says, well, there's not many seats left. And she says, well, let me check. So she goes on she hits these mysterious buttons on the computer. And she says, well, for the 27th, the second show, we do have two seats. They're behind the stage, but they're six rows from the stage, just behind the stage. So, I mean, that was all they had except for being like, way up in the rafters. And I'm like, I don't want to sit there. So we took those. And so they were really good seats. Now, obviously, when Elton would be walking in front of the stage, you'd see his back. But for the most part, he was sitting at the piano. And we were pretty close to the stage for the sixth row. And he's sitting. So I had a pretty clear view of him for the whole show. Except, like I said, when he went in front of the band and then, went in front of the stage, then you're seeing his back. But that didn't happen all that much. So those weren't really bad seats, even though they're behind the stage. It was a wide open stage. And the funny thing is, I brought this camera with, as I said, my gosh, back then, hardly anybody had a camera. And if you did, it was these bad Kodak little brownie things that were horrible. So I've got some pictures from the concert. But, I mean, we weren't that far away. But these pictures, there was no such thing as Zoom, especially from a camera that you bought, a normal person bought back then. And so these pictures make it look like we were 1,000 feet away. We actually were closer than we were. So it's a little dot. And then let's face it, at that time, Elton's got this little round bald head. So basically, you see this little round spot behind this very cool piano, though, which lit up and everything. But I was looking at the concert tickets. I still have it. And so we were in the mezzanine section, which was right above where the bowl of the stadium was, where the hockey, or the basketball was. And it was row F, that was sixth row, section N, and I was in seat three. And so I'll never forget getting those tickets. And when I had those tickets in my hand, and it said, Jerry Weintraub and Concerts West present Elton John, and I'm sitting there going, and this is like April or May, and I'm sitting there going, oh my God, in July, I'm going to be seeing Elton John. And I was blown away. Like I said, none of my friends, going to a concert was not a normal thing for my age group at that time. but I had to go see that. And I will, to this day, thank my mom, even though she's passed away for 10 years now, but for taking me, because, you know, at that time, I'm sure she's like, oh, my God, what am I doing? You know, my dad dropped us off and, you know, it was kind of, you know, and then they were still like, you know, this whole Elton John thing and, you know, this fad. Now, little did they know that it was going to be a lifetime obsession. And as I always say, July 27th, 1976 was the first concert. And now 40 years later, I already have my ticket in hand for October 26th for my 165th Elton John concert. Who would have thought that when this 12-year-old kid and his mom went to Chicago Stadium to see Elton John in 1976, that 40 years later, he would have seen 160, up to this point, 163 more shows after that one, have had the opportunity to have met Elton John four times, have had the opportunity to write eight of his official concert programs, have had a chance to meet and actually become quasi-friends with many members of his band at the time. It's been a crazy, wild experience that I never could have thought as a 12-year-old kid going to that concert 40 years ago this week on July 27th, that so much would have happened in the next 40 years, and it has. And it's been an amazing, you know, stroke of luck, as well as a lot of time, you know, a lot of time put in here. I've got the nickname Elton Jim, and I think I've earned that name. And I think that what the one thing that now when I look back at this date, and I will talk more about the whole experience of the concert is when we talk to Mick Kaler very soon as part of our Pop Culture Club, because Mick also went to one of the concerts of this four-night stand in Chicago. But one of the great memories of this was the fact that I did go with my mom and that my mom did take me. We were best buddies, and I look back at it now, and I'm glad that not only did I see Elton John at that time, but I'm glad that I saw it with her, because now it becomes a lifetime memory. And I've gone to 164 shows in my lifetime. And a lot of people say, well, why have you gone to so many shows? In fact, before the podcast recorded today, we were talking with Mike, the producer. And I said, yeah, I've got, you know, tickets to 165 coming up in October. And he said, he looks at me. I think he genuinely likes me, but I also think he thinks I'm weird. And that's fine. But he looked at me and he goes, you know, five shows of one band is a lot. So 165 is, what's the word to explain it? But, you know, I've never really, and there's been a part of me that says, well, you know, I remember that first time seeing him and I literally was shaking. And that's legit. It was that big of a deal. And you could say, well, you know, that's silly. Okay, whatever. I don't care. For me, it was a big deal. And I was shaking. It was cool to be in the same room with this guy, as I said before, who only existed to me on album covers and magazine pictures and movie screens and TV shows. And now suddenly, for the next 2.5 hours or so, we're in the same room. And that was, for a 12-year-old at that time, it was an earth-shattering experience. But the other side of the coin, as I said about my mom taking me to that, and she was impressed when the show was over too. She may have thought this guy was a goofball, but I remember hearing her talk to her friend saying, you know, I took Jimmy to see that Elton John concert, and my gosh, that guy played for 2.5 hours. And her big revelation of the concert was, and he didn't even have any sheet music in front of him. Because back then, you know, when my parents would go to see big bands, they would all be up on the stage and they all have those little, you know, those little risers and stuff. And every musician had sheet music to play the songs. And so here was this whole rock band, and there's Elton sitting and playing, you know, 25 songs, whatever it was at the time, without a lick of sheet music. And that blew her away. But the thing is, people say, well, why do you go to so many shows? And I didn't even know if I knew this until somewhat recently. But My mom passed away 10 years ago. In fact, it'll be 10 years ago this year. And she loved to go dancing. When in her era, that's where you, instead of going to clubs or going wherever, that's what you did. That's where you met people. That's where you congregated. That's where you, and I think that's where she met my dad. They would go to these dance halls here in Chicago, the Aragon Ballroom, which is still around and still has concerts, or the Paradise, which is where Styx had an album called Paradise Theater. There was a lot of these places where they'd go dance, they'd live bands, and they would spend their whole evening dancing, and that's where they'd meet people. And she was a very good dancer, even up to where when she got older. You go to a wedding or any kind of affair where there was a band, and she would get up there and start jitterbugging and dancing. She loved to dance. So obviously, Elton's got a song called Tiny Dancer, so it does remind me of her in that way. But there is a line in the song, if you know the song, where it says, "Now she's in me, always with me, tiny dancer in my hand." And, you know, now that she's been gone for 10 years, you know, Elton, that song was not one of his hits. In fact, that song was released and never did anything in 1971. It only became popular in 2000 or 2001 from the movie Almost Famous. Thankfully, Cameron Crowe put that song in a small section of the movie where the band in Almost Famous, it's about a rock band on the road, and they're all singing in the early 70s, and everybody on the bus is singing Tiny Dancer. And because of the exposure in that movie, that song took on a whole new life. And it became now, it's one of his most beloved, greatest hits. But it wasn't for 30 years. It was for Elton fans who would hear him play it in concert, and I'll obviously play the album that it came from, Madman Across the Water. But it was not on the radio. It was never played, except maybe on some FM stations sometimes. But it was not a top 40 hit at all until the last 15 years. And now it's considered one of his classics. But there is that line, "Now she's in me, always with me." And I always think of that line about my mom, because I do feel that she is in me, and I do believe that she's always with me. And so it just dawned on me recently, in fact, that I think I keep going to these concerts because Elton plays that song all the time. Now, he has to. And when he does play that song live, and I'm sitting there and I'm usually close up, and he sings that song, it reminds me of my mom. And when he sings that line, "Now she's with me always, now she's in me, always with me," she feels very present to me. And I always get a little tingle. And I remember back to this event I'm telling you about today, July 27, 1976, when she took me to my first Elton John concert. And now that she's not here, when I hear that song and when I see him especially perform it live, it's almost like the meeting in that moment of two very important people in my life. And one has to be Elton John, who has been a major part of my life since I was 9, and certainly my mom. And those two people come together in that one moment when he sings that line. And it always gets me. And maybe there's something in the back of my mind that I keep going to those concerts because I want to get that feeling and I want to get that connection. And if that's what it is, then I will continue to go as long as he plays, because that is a great memory and it is a great moment for me. And every time he sings it, I just feel, like I said, a little tinge and a little kind of the smiles on my face. And it's, I remember my mom, and I remember going to this concert on July 27th, 1976, 40 years ago, my first one. And now 40 years later, I'm getting ready to see number 165. And we're back here with Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, remembering July 27th, 1976. 40 years ago this week is when I went to see my first Elton John concert. And as I said, now 40 years later, and I'm getting ready to see my 165th concert. And I still get goosebumps, and I still get excited. And as I said, I still keep going back to the well, because it still is a great experience musically, personally, as well as other types of things that, as I've mentioned before, memories of my mom taking me to that. So there's a lot of stuff built into this, and it is a part of my life. And I usually, up to this point, I probably see about 5 to 6 Elton shows a year, and who knows when he's going to stop. So I'm going to certainly try to see as many as I can before that that fateful day. As we do here on the Podtastic every week, we have a, most every week, we have a segment called the Pop Culture Club. And a part of that is a charter member, Mick Kaler. Mick, welcome back to the Pop Culture Club.
Well, when you're talking about Elton John, then you're right in my wheelhouse, too. So,
and I said earlier that we bonded and became friends 30-some years ago. It's kind of scary. It's almost 35 years now that we've known each other.
Right.
But the we bonded over two things, the Honeymooners TV show and Elton John.
And Springsteen.
And Springsteen, too. But I think initially it was Elton and the Honeymooners.
Yeah, definitely. And the only thing I wanted to say, and obviously you've covered some of the grounds of your early passion for Elton, and the only thing I wanted to cover on mine was I would hear these songs on the radio, you know, in the early 70s, and I'd hear this name, Elton John. And it almost sounded like Belton John. Like, I'd hear it, like, okay, well, these songs are good. I like these songs. And for me, and I don't know where the actual nexus of the passion for Elton came for you, but I liked the songs. But in 73, on television, there was that special, Elton John and Bernie Taupin Say Goodbye, Norma Jean, and Other Things.
Right, yeah.
And I came across it one night at home watching it. I didn't hear about it being hyped or whatever. I just kind of fell into it and basically got educated on what Elton John was all about, from, you know, a young boy to, you know, struggling as a club piano player and meeting Bernie and all the other things. And as soon as that all rolled through and I watched the whole show, I was like, there you go. There's my
guy. Yeah, that was a documentary that was put together by a guy named a filmmaker named Brian Forbes.
Right.
Who used to live next to Elton, and he was a British filmmaker, and at the height of Elton's popularity in 73 and 74, Elton gave him a lot of access. And so there was, like you said, it was kind of the first time that that he really, you know, the whole story of him was presented. And
it was kind of like VH1's Behind the Music before there was that.
Yeah, I think it was on ABC. They used to do on Saturday nights. This is before Saturday Night Live. They used to do on ABC a thing called either In Concert. Yeah, it was a show called In Concert, and they would usually show different rock acts. And once again, it was on Saturday night at 10:30 because they figured, well, no one else would watch this except young kids. And I remember when that was on as well. I saw it that night, and that I'd forgotten how much that really did also tip it in. I always count, as I said earlier in the podcast here, that I always count my official Elton John fandom, if you will, starting with when I bought the 45 of Crocodile Rock.
Okay, sure.
Because that was the first time I went from just listening to him, as you said, heard the songs on the radio, but never really went out. When I went and actually thought about spending 67 cents and going to Goldblatt's,
right, getting the record,
to buy a record, then you take it to the next level, at least back then. And so that's the way I put it. But, yeah, there's no doubt. In fact, that documentary that we're talking about is called Elton John and Bernie Taupin Say Goodbye to Norma Jean and Other Things. And it's really a fascinating documentary, because not only does it tell his story, but it also goes behind the scenes of when they were recording Goodbye, Yellow Brick Road.
Right, exactly, which is, of course, his masterpiece.
Yeah, and then there's some great shots of him at the Hollywood Bowl, which was an amazing concert back in 73. And so that is actually available as part of a deluxe version. The DVD of that is available on the 40th anniversary edition of Goodbye, Yellow Brick Road. So if you go out and buy this deluxe 40th anniversary package of Goodbye, Yellow Brick Road on CD. It's got the remastered CD, but it also has a DVD of this documentary that Mick is mentioning. And it really is very insightful, and really is now an amazing keepsake, because there is so little film
Right,
of him from those early days. Because once again, there was no video. Rock and roll in the 70s was just beginning to take hold, but it wasn't a mainstream music. It was still kind of considered counterculture. It was still kind of considered a fad.
Well, and the other part, too, is even if they did videotape things like a bandstand appearance, American Bandstand, or a midnight special, whatever, they taped over them. They're like,
yeah.
All right, that one aired, okay.
Yeah, right.
Let's record over this stuff because we got to save the tapes.
Yeah, so.
And that's what happened.
Yeah, so it was, but as I was saying earlier on in the show here, you really, it's hard to go back, even though we're in the Toronto time warp here, to go back and really, you can't even really explain to somebody that's younger what, because they take for granted that life has always been this way, and we've all done that in our lifetimes. But you have to understand that Elton was so big, and he did not have the outlets that a rock star has today to push their music or their brand, and yet he was still everywhere.
Yeah, well, the other part of it, too, is, okay, then, you know, the Pinball Wizard part in Tommy came out, and I was a big pinball fanatic since I was very little, so that helped, you know, me push along.
Well,
there.
I just happen to have the pinball machine, my friend.
Yeah, I know, because your sickness goes to no end, I know. But anyway, in my eighth grade chorus, I sang Pinball Wizard.
And as I told earlier here, for Halloween of 1975, guess what I went as is my costume?
The Pinball Wizard.
Of course.
Yeah. I think I saw the movie Tommy that summer, the summer of 75.
Yeah.
I think I saw it three times, maybe four times. Just that summer. And again, like I said, that helped solidify things. And then, of course, now we move up to 76. And, I mean, I remember Elton being on the cover of Time magazine, Rock's Captain Fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, as I said earlier, 75, even though a lot of times they'll look at Elton's career and say between 70 and 76, he was the dominant factor, and he really was. But when you look at 75 through 76,
right,
it's unbelievable. The year starts out with the number one song in America for like 2 weeks is his cover of Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds.
Yep.
That's number one. 2 months later, he follows up Lucy in the Sky with Philadelphia Freedom, which becomes a number one song. Right after that, in the summer, you've got the Tommy movie that comes out. Then he releases Captain Fantastic and the Brown Dirt Cowboy, which is the first album in the history of the charts to enter at number one. That's in May. Then in October, he plays two sold-out shows at Dodger Stadium, 55,000 people apiece, the first act to play Dodger Stadium since the Beatles in 1976. And then in October and November, he releases Rock of the Westies, which has Island Girl, which was number three for 3 weeks. And that album also entered the charts at number one to be the second album ever to enter the charts. I mean, and there's stuff I'm leaving out. Then he also was on that Cher special. Remember the Cher special?
Oh, yeah, with Flip Wilson.
Yeah, I mentioned that with Bette Midler. So that was there. I mean, there was an Elton John Day in 1975 in L.A. where he got his star.
Right.
On the Walk of Fame.
I remember here in Chicago, WLS had an EJ Day.
Yeah, I mean, he was just, so people say to me, why Elton? And it's like, well, you have to understand, at that time, he was the guy.
And there are other acts, obviously, out. You know, the Rolling Stones.
Oh, definitely.
Or Paul McCartney. But nothing was as dominant. And again, I don't know if you see, I mean, I guess nowadays maybe Taylor Swift. But Taylor Swift is just one of the Justin Timberlakes and the Demi Lovatos and all these others who are out there as big news. But Elton, and especially when the 76 tour was announced, and again, this wasn't online. This was in the newspaper.
Yeah, I remember seeing in the top of the Tribune, there was this little square that said Elton John to play here this summer.
Yeah, and it was just like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
So,
now, where did you – now, I was telling my story. I went to the Sears Ticketron in my neighborhood to get my tickets. Where did you get your tickets?
Got mine in Yorktown in Lombard, because I live in Elmhurst. There was a Ticketron that was in – I think it was in the Montgomery Ward.
Yeah, they were in wards, too. They were mostly in department stores.
Right. I remember there used to be a Ticketron on Michigan Avenue that was just a little, you know, kiosk store.
Right.
But anyway, we went, and the first three dates had already gone on sale, and we'd missed it because they announced it, and the tickets were gone in 2 seconds. And then they announced they were going to add one more show. And so my sister and I and one of my friends, we lined up early in the morning and got a real good place in line on a Saturday morning to get the tickets, and everybody wanted main floor tickets, and they were being told, oh, it's already the 30th floor, row or 40th row, whatever. And when it was our turn, I spoke up and I said, what's the mezzanine look like?
Yeah.
And the lady, I remember she lit up and goes, oh, there's really good seats there. I said, well, then let's get them there. And I think we had six tickets. We were in the second row of the mezzanine, and when we saw the map of where the stage was set up and how Elton set up his piano, we were about 12 rows to the side of the stage. And he was on the other side of the stage, literally facing us.
Yeah, like I said, the same thing. I was in the mezzanine, six rows up, the behind the stage, and those were great seats. Aside when he would go to the, you know, then when he would walk in front, I'd see
right.
his back. But in terms of, we were on his piano side. I was looking at his. I mean, you know, the pictures I have because of my bad camera looks like we were 1,000 miles away.
Yeah, same here.
But we were. They were great seats.
Yeah, and mine were too, and just. And of course, you know, we got the tickets like in early June or late May, whatever it was, and the show is until late July.
Oh, I know. I sat there with those tickets going, oh, my God. Oh, my God.
And I'm just like, I have to wait all this time.
I know.
This is insane.
So now my memory, if you ask me what is my main memory of that concert, now I was 12. How old were you, like 14 or 15?
I was 15. Okay. I was just after freshman year
so
of high school.
A little older than me. I'll never forget when the lights went out, and it was obvious he was coming out.
Yep.
The place went dark. Now, we went to different shows. I went on the second show. You went on the last show. But still, same scenario. The lights went out. Back then, everybody had these bad cameras with flash bulbs.
Yep.
And I'll just never forget, I never heard a roar of a crowd. And I'd been to Blackhawk games in the Chicago Stadium.
Same here.
But I never heard a roar. And if that's my main memory. I could think of moments of the concert and certain parts of songs. It was 40 years ago. You know, I don't have that kind of a memory. But if there's one memory, I'll never forget when the lights went out, the roar of the crowd and the flashbulbs.
Right. Well, the funny thing I remember that same thing, Jim, on the night that I went, and I remember because nowadays you go to a lot of concerts and the lights start to drop bit by bit. Like if you go to the Allstate Arena, they
right.
start flicking them off.
Yeah.
These went out in one shot.
Exactly.
Like
yeah. Boom. It went from light to dark.
And the thing was, we were so busy just checking out the stage and stuff, I didn't notice the guys that get up in the rigs and all that to shine the lights. I wasn't paying attention to any of that.
Right.
So when the lights dropped, I almost felt scared because of just that fever, that screaming.
Oh, I know. It was unbelievable. I never heard anything that loud in my life.
So then he comes out, and he opens with Grow Some Funk of Your Own. And we're all standing and going nuts. And I remember just being frozen, like, okay, this is really happening. And this is my first big time concert with a guy who is like world famous. And we're you know maybe 50 feet, 60 feet away from the guy, whatever it is, 80 feet, but we're close enough where we're there. And I was just I felt like it was an out of body experience.
Yeah, no, I mean, and I'll never forget when it was over. And I'm in my dad's car on the way home. My ears were ringing. And that was another sensation I never had before.
Exactly.
Because...
And then you talk about the things that you never forget. And I've actually written up a little essay about my first Elton concert that I'll post up online someday. But the other thing I remember... Well, then after he did that first song, then he went to Goodbye Yellow Brick Road. And that's when I finally settled in, like... Okay, I'm really here, this is really happening, and this is great. Because the first song, I was frozen. But the other thing I remember was when it was time to do Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting, and Elton singing, and he says, Saturday Night's All Right, All Right, All Right, and he's ready to do the woos.
Right.
And the whole crowd did it.
Yeah.
And I had such a shiver.
Right.
That I felt like somebody poured a bucket of ice on my head.
Well, I said when he came out, you can laugh, whatever, but when he first came out, I mean, this is the first time this guy actually was flesh and blood. He had only been a picture on an album cover or a picture in a magazine or something.
Yep.
And I was shaking.
Yeah, I just, again, and I was 3 years older, but again, I mean, I'd been to a couple of, I think when I was very, very young, my parents took me to see Buck Owens and Charlie Pride, but I was very young, and I liked the music, but this wasn't the same kind of thing. And this was just a huge moment, and again, to put it back in historical perspective, there was nobody hotter
in
the music universe to see.
No.
You know, you talk about the Hamilton show with
the
play and the small theater and all that. Believe me, nothing compares to saying I'm going to see Elton John, and everyone's just like, oh, that's so cool.
And you know, I mean, the funny thing too was that I was so excited because I've been seeing pictures of him throughout the year, and he was wearing these big white glasses.
Right.
But every show he would always wear different glasses. And I was praying that he would wear the white glasses because those were my favorite.
Yeah.
And I saw a picture. In fact, I went back into my 20 bins of Elton memorabilia, which I have in the basement.
Which the day that Elton turns up missing will be proven as evidence.
And, I was talking to you earlier today about what we were going to talk about today. Not only did I find my official program from the concert,
right,
but tucked in it is the, and here it is, you can hear it, the yellowed review of the first night's concert by Lynn Van Matry of the Chicago Tribune. I saw it online earlier today, but here I have it. I have the actual review, and it's yellowed. It's 40 years old.
Tribune rock critic Lynn Van Matry.
And right. Once again, I just got to love my mom. She dated it on the bottom. It says 7/27/76. I just noticed that now. And so she knew I was going to keep this thing. I was so happy because the picture of Elton that they had from the first night's concert, he was wearing these cool glasses that had little palm trees on each side. And so I was a little worried. And when he came out for the concert that I saw him with, he had the white glasses. He had a red, white, and blue checkered
rugby shirt.
Jacket. Because he was wearing the jackets, and he had sort of like sweatpants, and then he had this silver banana that was very phallic at the time.
But we didn't recognize that.
No, we didn't know that yet. We didn't find out until September of that year that he was bisexual.
Right.
So he was, so that was all very, there was a lot of stuff going on in that concert, but he had just like gym shoes on, running around. I mean, little did we know that he was high on cocaine at the time. But there was a lot of energy at that concert. In fact, I've got bootlegs from that concert tour. And the one thing you do notice is, boy, those songs were played very fast.
Yes.
There's a very fast pace because I think everybody in the band was probably on cocaine.
They're probably all wired on speed or something.
Yeah.
Because, in fact, it's funny you mention that because I remember when he closed out with Pinball Wizard and the opening of it. At first, I wasn't sure that was Pinball Wizard.
Yeah, I mean, it was.
It was just like. Oh, that must be Pinball Wizard, I guess. Okay.
But now, what did you remember? And the one thing I never knew this until several years ago, once again, thanks to the internet. So, as I said, I'm sitting behind the stage. So he would go up every so often. He'd leave the piano and go up to the audience and, wave and go to them. And then at one point, he even played the acoustic guitar during a song called Love Song, although he can't play the guitar. But so at one point, he took his jacket and he did sort of like a strip tease with his jacket and peeled it off of his shoulders very slowly. And the crowd went wild. And he had suspenders on. And I saw it was a yellow T-shirt from the back. But I couldn't make out what it was because throughout the concert, his jacket was closed. And I never knew what that was until about 5 years ago. Online, I found some pictures from that concert, and it was a Sting T-shirt.
Oh, the soccer, sure.
Because the Chicago Sting was a good team in the just then beginning of the soccer league, American Soccer League, and so he loved soccer. He owned a team called Watford in England, and so he had the Chicago Sting T-shirt on. But I never knew that,
right?
Because I was only seeing him from the back. Now, what did he wore? What did he wear for your concert? Do you remember?
He had on the striped rugby shirts. The shirt, like, I think it was black and yellow. And then at first he had the green, very green, sparkly, glittery jacket with the banana. And that was the banana necklace. That was for most of the show. And then when he came out for Saturday Night, sorry, for Fighting, he had a red, white, and blue kind of Uncle Sam looking jacket.
Yeah, because that was, he had that was a striped jacket. Looked like a flag, didn't it?
Right. And,
yeah.
And then the last one he had was when he came out for Your Song and then Pinball Wizard, when the band joined him again, it was pink, and it had a picture of, like, it looked like Carmen Miranda on the back of it.
Yeah.
Glitter.
Did he have the big, did he wear the top hat too? The red, white, and blue top hat?
He did for the red, white, and blue outfit. Yeah. He did that too.
Because remember, that was in 76. That was the bicentennial.
Yeah, exactly. And that was part of the deal too. So it was just, again, it was just such a mega, like you said, anything he did, you know, I remember even saying he was going to play a Paul McCartney song, and McCartney had just been in town a couple months before with the Wings Over America tour, and he even made reference to it saying, I know that Paul was here a couple months ago, and some people who were there, you know, went nuts for that. But putting it, again, back into historical context, Jim, again, as you said, and I know we sound like a couple of old dudes saying this, but we are, and it's the way it was, okay? Nowadays, hey, Springsteen, when he came last this past January, before the show was over, I had already seen on YouTube, somebody had linked up covering the Eagles' Take It Easy. It was already on there, okay?
Right.
and the way celebrities were when we were growing up, if Elton John went to a restaurant in Chicago or up to the Playboy Club in Wisconsin to hang out and do things, it got into the newspaper a day or two later, and it was a big deal. Now it's a 10-second blurb on Twitter or YouTube, or Entertainment Tonight might say, hey, Lady Gaga was hanging out with her husband or boyfriend at some play, and here they are meeting fans. And it's 5 seconds of it, because everybody is so much more accessible.
Yeah, no, there was no. In fact, the cool thing was that Elton used Chicago as his home base.
Yeah, he was basing out of there, and that's where I
started to do a lot of the Midwest shows.
I started learning stuff about tours, like, okay, if he's going to play St. Louis, Detroit, Milwaukee, Indianapolis, he'll base out of Chicago, and a lot of bands do that, but I didn't know that kind of thing.
Right.
I just thought they went to the Indianapolis, you know, Holiday Inn or Four Seasons or whatever, and then did the Detroit one, but they don't do that.
In fact, there was a book about this tour, because it was such a popular tour. It's a book called It's a Little Bit Funny, and there's pictures. It's basically a picture book of photographer followed him around, and when they did most of the major stops in all the cities of the tour. And once again, don't forget, in 1976, Playboy was still based here. Hugh Hefner still lived at the mansion in Chicago, the Playboy mansion in Chicago. And so Elton and his lyricist Bernie Taupin went to the Playboy mansion and played foosball with Hugh Hefner and his then girlfriend Barbie Benton.
Yep, up in Lake Geneva.
Well, no, down here.
Oh, down here. I thought it was up in Lake Geneva.
No, it was down here.
Yeah,
it was down here because they showed him bowling.
Right. Oh, that's right. Yeah, I remember seeing the pictures of that, too. Yeah, and Elton's in a suit.
Yeah. Elton's in a suit bowling.
Just take it off. And it'd be a little more casual, EJ, okay?
Well, I mean, like I said, it's a shame that there's not on YouTube, there has been some video of this concert tour from various different venues, but nothing, you know, professionally shot and not the whole concert. I have heard bootlegs from it, and at least that's a memory. But once again, back at that time, you didn't have – you know, you didn't have access to the live. You saw the concert at that moment.
Right. You lived in the moment. You didn't have a video camera.
No. And that's why it's so funny that as we talk about this 40 years ago, most of what we're talking about are just all we have left are those real life memories of that moment and what has stayed with us.
Right. And it was funny because I remember a few weeks before he played Chicago, he had opened the tour and he had played at Philadelphia, and there was an advance review from that show that was in the paper. And at that time, at least at one show, they said Elton kind of sounded a little surly and said, I'm not going to be back here for a while, so you better, you know.
Yeah, right. I remember that, yeah.
And at the time, and that's why after the tour, and then after the Rolling Stone article where he comes out as bisexual, I started kind of seeing, okay, we may see a tapering down. Not that Elton would ever go away, but again, as you've mentioned in the past, tours like this did not happen every year or every 2 years. This was a once every 3 or 4 years kind of a situation.
Yeah, it was a big, it was an event.
Yeah, and you know, and I worked in country radio for a long time, and country artists, they literally tour, you know, every year, every summer they'll be out on the road, or every fall or whatever. And Elton was in 76, and then we didn't see him again till 79 when he did the wonderful solo shows with Ray Cooper at the Auditorium Theater. So we had to wait over 3 years for him to come back.
Yeah, and then even before that, it was 74.
Right.
When he was here before that. So it was always a couple of years and stuff. But I'll tell you, it's amazing that it's been 40 years.
Yep.
There are moments that I can remember that it does feel like yesterday. There are moments in my mind when I close my eyes, I can still see and hear some of the moments from that. And it will always be a very special memory for me. As I said, I as a 12-year-old, who would have thought that I would have seen 164 shows after that? Or 163
well,
after that.
Had I known you at that age, I probably would have been able to peg that on you, I swear.
Well, I want to thank Mick Kaler for sharing his memories of 1976 in July, 40 years ago, when he also saw Elton John. And the funny thing is, I almost went to that last concert.
Oh, really? What happened?
Yeah, well, I could have had access to tickets, but my mom and dad were like, you just saw him. If you only would have known. So I was already wanting to go to multiple shows.
Right.
But they were like, you just saw him, and you know, don't. I just took the ticket. The ticket was $9.50.
Yeah, $9.50 plus the 50 cent service charge.
So they were like, nowadays, come on, $10 ticket, and you just saw him 2 days ago. What do you need to see him again? Blah, blah, blah. So I was a little upset at them for a while. But how funny would that have been? Because then we would have both been at the same concert.
Yeah, well, it's funny you mentioned the $9.50 because nowadays $9.50 to see Elton John for 2.5 hours. $9.50 now is the service charge.
Yeah, that's not even the that's even more. The handling charge is more than $9.50.
Yeah, to pay $130 to get a decent seat, and it's a whole different ballgame.
Well, anyway, I want to thank once again Mick Kaler for joining us for this very special and personal edition of the Pop Culture Club, and thanks for sharing your memories of July 1976, Mick.
Rock on, mister.
There you go. I'm Elton Jim Toronto, and this has been Captain Podtastic, remembering July 27th, 1976, my first Elton John concert. So thanks for tuning in. Hope you were able to have a fun little walk down my yellow brick road, and we will be back always here at WGN Plus for Captain Podtastic, from the end of the web to your screen.